Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 5th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good, good. I'm glad you could be here. So, Mariah, the Green New Deal, of course, is a topic of some fascination among climate hawks because it represents the most coherent and most, popular is not the right word, most politically credible discussion of climate change that I think I've ever seen. It's something that people interested in climate are interested in, right? It's sort of a...
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, I think in some ways it's equally, popular is not the right word, but equally talked about among the Republicans, right? I mean, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who introduced the resolution with Ed Markey, is being sort of demonized and called names and, you know, talked about ad nauseum, which is sort of in some ways great for climate change great for exposure to the Green New Deal. Yeah. All, what do they say? That, you know, all news, it's not all news is good news. What's the, it's like, you know, when you, it's sort of like any press is good press, right? As long as you're getting it out there.
Well, yeah, I will admit that, Ocasio-Cortez drives those people nuts and, good. So she was on, the MSNBC. She had like an hour-long town hall. Did you see any of that? She
was on with Chris Hayes. It was really interesting.
And he asked her about if she expected the criticism she was going to get from Fox News and whatnot. And she said yes, but she didn't expect them to make fools of themselves in the process of criticizing.
Yeah, she's really fun to listen to and watch, and she definitely comes out strong as someone who's really for the people, right, which is nice to see. I mean, she pushed a lot to say, you know, as constituents, get out there and be loud so that you can give your officials the social license they need to move forward on climate change.
Right, right. So I wanted to talk about the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the MSNBC thing, but before that, let's just rewind to the fact that the Green New Deal did suffer a Pyrrhic defeat in the Senate, where Mitch McConnell, the arch villain of almost every set piece of American politics now, Mitch McConnell brought forth the Green New Deal for a vote in the Senate, where it went down to defeat. And I think most of the Democrats voted present, right? I don't know if I was sort of out of action when that went through. But I think
that was like their sort of protest, right, is to just all vote present.
Because McConnell brought it up without any kind of debate, and with the intent of trying to put Democrats in a bad position of either voting for or against the bill, it was my opinion that it was actually putting the GOP in a bad spot. But I saw an article in the Globe that said that Markey declared the whole exercise a victory in the sense that it was pushing the Senate to have more legitimate discussions than he'd ever seen since 2010. Did you see any of that? I mean, sort of commentary about why it was good to have had that vote?
Right. I mean, he definitely nailed it. He definitely said that despite, you know, that it was sidelined, the resolution was sidelined by the GOP-controlled Senate, that everybody's talking about it, and it's getting a ton of exposure, and how to combat climate change is something that needs a ton of exposure.
Right.
So, you know, while it may not go anywhere in terms of legislation for a long time, it's getting people talking about climate change, which hasn't been talked about in a long time.
Yeah,
not in this way.
Well, certainly. And I guess, speaking of people talking about climate change, I saw a clip of a presidential I guess it wasn't that presidential, but it was a political rally where Trump spoke, and he basically made fun of Ocasio-Cortez, called her a bartender, you know, and how silly the Green New Deal was, and how you get you would get cancer from listening to wind turbines turn. I don't know if you saw any of that.
No, I try not to look at that garbage because I don't think it's respectful and I don't think it moves the country forward. I mean, you know, to sort of highlight that during the town hall meeting that Chris Hayes hosted on MSNBC, at one point they had, we can talk about Bob Inglis in a little bit more in a second, but they had Bob Inglis, who's a Republican, on the show, and he was, you know, presenting an interesting but different viewpoint, and someone sort of name called him, and Alexandria AOC immediately shot them down and said, that's unacceptable. And then she said, and that's the difference between Trump and me, because I don't allow these things to happen. And I see that as not a way to move us forward. And so yeah, I saw some of those headlines, and you know, I think that's gross. That's not productive for our country. I'm sad that that's the leadership we have.
Yes. Well, I think that one of the telltales that I took out of it was that after the absurd statement from Trump, that this Grassley, the senator from Iowa, made a statement saying that whatever the president had said was idiotic, and the idea that you could get sick from wind turbines is a stupid idea. And it just struck me that, I mean, Grassley's a Republican, but it is true that many of the farms in Iowa are places where they have wind turbines now, and they're making money at it. And it struck me that how ingrained renewable energy and things like wind turbines can become, and how important to the economy they can become, that push a guy like Grassley to call the president's idiotic comments, to actually say it out loud and say they are idiotic. And I thought that was a good sign, perhaps.
There's potential, really good wind potential in Grassley's sort of district with his constituents. Do you think maybe he's trying to?
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's trying to protect. Okay. I mean, and I think there's more than potential. I think there's I think the idea of having a wind turbine on each acre of your farm is another way to make money, right? Without harming any of the crops, and so that's a popular thing to do. And so, yeah, saying that Grassley all of a sudden has to defend all the people in his own state from the madman in the White House. So, but I agree with you. It's a disappointing lack of leadership at the very, 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 very top. So let's go.
But it's good to hear people calling him out on it from you know, both sides, saying this is not who we are. You know, for whatever their reasons. If Grassley's trying to make sure he guards his constituents, well, good. I mean, especially if he's you know, doing it for wind power. And, you know, and one of the things that Inglis mentioned, that Bob Inglis mentioned on the town hall, that same town hall by MSNBC, was that he said, you know, you're seeing more and more Republicans that are really saying, look, we do think climate change is anthropogenic, caused by humans, and it's something that we need to address. And I think he said that Mitch McConnell has even said, I think climate change is human caused, right? And maybe not, you know, in any major way or on record, but there was some attribution of that kind of going back to these conversations we're having about the Green New Deal, where sort of now the thing is to say that for so long climate change was, you know, deny the climate change, and then it was like, well, maybe it exists, but it's not human caused, and now then it was, well, maybe it's human caused, but it will cripple the economy if we address it, and now it's, well, it's human cause, and we should address it, but not with the Green New Deal. Right? So, you know, we're incremental change here. So,
yeah, I've seen it characterized as both incremental change progress, but also just a continued effort to maintain complacency. Right? There's always some reason not to rush. We'll take care of it. There's a different way to do it. So let's set up the discussion of the town hall, because there were some interesting points in it. Favorite son Chris Hayes of MSNBC hosted a town hall someplace in New York, I guess in Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's district, to talk
Bronx,
about
right? Hmm? Bronx?
The Bronx, yeah, to talk about the Green New Deal. And there were various speakers. I think there was Maria Gunn Wright, I think is the name of one of the women who's helped to write the Green New Deal. There were Ro Khanna, right, is a rep. So there were a bunch of different people that came in to speak. Of course, they talked a lot to Ocasio-Cortez, who gave she's very eloquent and like puts into words the things you want to say, right? She's very, very good that way. And one of the people was a Republican representative from North to South Carolina. I forget
South
which.
Carolina, South Bob Carolina. Inglis. Yeah. So he was representative for South Carolina for like maybe 12 years or something like that. And he had, he was very, his sort of ideals fell right in line with typical sort of conservative of ideals supported by the NRA, supported by Right to Life. And in 2010, he said, yes, I still support all of those things, but we've got it wrong. Our party's got it wrong on climate change. And he was unseated, even though everything else was, he had a very strong rating.
He's primary from the right, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And because he sort of took this courageous step, he actually got the JFK Profile of Courage Medal, sort of saying, good for you for standing up for what's right, even though you knew it would cost you your seat.
Mm-hmm.
So he was on MSNBC too.
He was on there
too.
As well. He was as part of the conversation. So I guess one of the let me give it over to you. The set up not a debate. It was a discussion, right? But the back and forth between Hayes and AOC and Inglis that were interesting. What sort of things happened?
Yeah, I mean, they sort of started off with Hayes and AOC diving into some of the details of the resolution, and AOC making it very clear that, even if this was to be voted, this resolution was to be sort of voted in or whatever, however you call it, it still nothing would happen because it's just really... It's just that. It's just a resolution, right? It's not, it's sort of a blueprint for the things that we should do. And then they talked about the feasibility, the technical feasibility, the economic feasibility. And of course, really all of the feasibility sounds fantastic when they talk about it. It's just the political will that's sort of dragging.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Inglis kind of posed the counterpoint to that. And he said, look, you've got this, we've got a really big problem, which is that we have to solve climate change in 12 years. But this approach is connecting climate change to other things that he's kind of saying that's going to drag down the climate change action. And so, why don't we just focus on the climate change action and not put in all of these other, socialists. I don't think he said socialists, but that's what the right is calling a lot of the programs as socialist programs. Why don't we table that
say
stuff?
Social programs instead of socialist.
Right, more progressive agendas, right? Social programs. Why don't we table all that stuff and just focus on climate change? Because if we don't focus on that, we're going to have a lot more problems to deal with. So he gave kind of that counterpoint. I didn't, of course, the audience kind of picked on him for that a little bit, I didn't think that was fair necessarily, because it's a good counterpoint. It's definitely something to think about and discuss.
Well, I think there's a continuous, I've seen it in so many places, I don't know if it's an accusation or a statement I suppose one of the big questions about the Green New Deal is whether or not the social programs, in quotation marks, are separable from the green programs. That is to say, the effort to convert energy, to have the energy conversion of the society, whether you can do that without taking on the social aspects, whether you can do it without taking on the idea of who's going to get the jobs, where's the money going to flow? Because it's going to be a financial transition, all kinds of transitions. And it's just, I guess I come down on the side more that these things are not separable, that it's very important that these things stay lockstep. So when I hear people, and it's not just English trying to separate them. A lot of people say, oh, yeah, yeah, why are you hanging all this this unnecessary, you know, socialist agenda on the climate change thing? And I try to push back saying that, you know, it's not a separate thing. It's not separable. I mean, am I crazy? Yeah, or what do you think about that?
I mean, so I don't know that I have come down on either side. And to my point, what I was saying earlier is just that I think it's important. I think Bob Bingus was bringing up a good point to be discussed. It's something for sure to take into consideration. I do think that, for example, with one of the challenges with the New Deal is that it didn't take into account all of the constituents, right? It was largely set up in a way that favored, certain demographics of people and alienated others, and we're still sort of feeling the effects from that. And so I think that for sure we need, you know, as we say in our closing, we need a just transition away from fossil fuels. And it should be thoughtful about making sure that it's careful with the needs of everybody, and particularly those who are most affected, which is often, the least wealthy among us, least
politically powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the same time, I can also reverse my own field and say, yeah, well, I mean, somehow you got to get the energy stuff going. I mean, how do you start the transition, without, I mean, it's almost easier to begin the green transition if you don't try to worry about too much about the winners and losers, literally, right? If you're trying to guarantee that everyone, that the currently least advantaged communities are not left out. I mean, that. Yeah.
Well, but you know, I think one of the points they made on the show, I don't know if it was directly related to this, is that look at France. Right. They tried to just start tackling climate change without thinking about all of the stakeholders. And that didn't work at all. Right. That, you know, they had protests and to some degree, I mean, John Muir has a quote about when you try and pick out anything by itself, you find it linked to everything else. Right. That's not, I'm butchering his quote, which is really a lovely quote. But, there are pieces of this where addressing climate change will just automatically help create new jobs and will help boost the economy and will help, reduce healthcare issues, health problems. So there's a lot of that will just sort of automatically fall into place from tackling climate change. But you need to make sure that, I think it's important that everybody feels like, I mean, it needs to have support, right? It needs to have.
I think that if you look at the New Deal, right? Roosevelt put together a coalition that went from the mid-1930s into, sort of, shall we say, the mid-1970s, 30 or 40 years of political cohesion around that idea. And I think that we need now to build a similar coalition that lasts a comparable amount of time, right? Because even if we pass a Green New Deal in 2021, that whole political ethos has to continue on to 2050 or 2060, right? In order to really and truly make the transition. So you need to have the societal buy-in of everyone in the society to make it go forward, to your point. I mean, I agree with you. You need everyone. And for some reason, I was thinking today how if the Green New Deal were to be implemented, you would look back on 2019 almost the way the world looks back on sort of the late 1930s, right? As sort of this quaint time of zoot suits and flappers and whatnot. And then, you know, 10 years later, you're at 1950 in a completely different world, right? There's so much has happened. You know, the cars are different. There's radio, there's TV, there's everything, right? And it looks quaint. So, I mean, when the Green New Deal finally makes the transition, it'll be so profound that you look back and say, oh, how could those people have spent so much time waiting in their car or driving someplace? You know, it's... I don't know.
Right. Life was tough back then in 2019. My goodness. Yeah, for sure. We're definitely in a zeitgeist. I think, right, that's the right word. The cusp of something that's quite a big change.
Right. So, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff. I think we're going to have to keep coming back to this question of the Green New Deal, I mean, there was a discussion in the AOC interview about whether or not there's the current proponents of the Green New Deal or the Tea Party of the left, which is now a twisted and distorted kind of analogy. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff about the accusation of socialism against the Green New Deal, whether that's fair, and how people on progressive people can try and redefine that term into something more concrete, more useful and more truthful. So there's all kinds of stuff there. I'm right. I mean, is there, yeah. We should, I don't know if we get too much time to go through. Is there anything else you wanted to hit on before we put this one down?
I do think that AOC did a really nice job. As you said, she's really an eloquent speaker and always just kind of says exactly what you're looking for the words, and she's got them, which is just lovely. But when they said, oh, it's the Tea Party of the left, and she said, well, no, because she feels that the Tea Party was based on xenophobia and like white supremacy and all of these ideals that sort of alienate people and ostracize people. Whereas she's saying this Green New Deal is based on something that includes people and that is looking out for the benefits of others. So that was kind of her rebuttal to this Tea Party of the left
concept.
Yeah. So,
well, that's a good way to leave it. I say we, the Tea Party of the left, I mean, it's not the Tea Party. It is just the gentle coming together of like-minded, what is it, gentle people, almost like Haight-Ashbury, 1967, taking care of each other. Anyway, we'll put it down there. We'll put up links to at least some of the stuff we talk about at the blog. The blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find links to this show on and other interesting tidbits at the Facebook page /MassClimateAction. You can listen to this show directly on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps. And of course, you can always go to the motherlode of Apple Podcasts, where everything is stored away. Please take a moment and send an email to the email address podcast@massclimateaction.net and tell us what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show, topics we ought to talk about, ideas you have, etc., etc. We'd love to hear from you. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, then we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool. Ha 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 ha.